This is the beginning of part two. According to David, business owners are black and white people who like things simple. So don't worry, even newbies will easily be able to blow them away with phrases like HTML and autoresponder series. But if you know for sure you're not the type of person who can get up in front of a live audience and perform a workshop, David includes some alternatives to that method at the end of this section. You'll also hear the easiest ways to get in with a small business association in your area, a link to 500 different products to use in your promotions. All about pricing. David offers a wide range of prices and packages, and you'll hear what determines what. Details about how to put a profitable joint venture together. Why David never charges a setup fee and why he suggests you don't either. How to make sure your outsourced work is high quality and worth it. How to overcome a lack of credibility. Tips and tricks for building a list at lightning speed. David says the most important thing is to just get out there, do it, and see what happens. Like with anything else, it's that first step that's usually the hardest to take. But if you set goals and strategies for yourself, you'll be surprised at how easy success can be. In this section, we'll help erase any fears you may still have about taking the initial plunge. Good luck and get out there and do it.
Okay, so this is part two of the frequently asked questions. As there are so many, we'll go right to Cynthia. Someone else beat me to my question about the outside sales flyer. I bought your SB for two. The SB won't return her phone calls. What do your flyers and business cards look like if you take out the Ask Me About Free SBA workshops?
Basically, one of the easiest ways to get in with the SBA now is to go online and look for your local chapter. And a lot of times they'll have workshops and events listed right there, and you can actually sign up right there and find out what's going on with those, and a lot of times they will get back to you then. Another thing, too, is if they get the SCORE team involved, then they're going to shoot you down instantly because they already know the deal. So I always tell everybody kind of stay away from that, but see if you can talk to the manager there and at one of the smaller SBDCs instead of the resource center itself. That's where all the biggies hang out. That's where everybody heads first, and that's usually the problem. But, you know, a little two-man job, you know, three-person staff at an SBDC on a college campus, which is where they're almost always at, they're way more open to get somebody to come in because they're really struggling anyway.
It looks like, too, that Cynthia has been doing it by phone. Would you recommend just walking in there?
That's how I did it initially. I just walked into a small SBDC and spoke with the manager there, and there was only one other person there on staff besides her. So that worked out really well, and they weren't really doing a whole lot at the time. And then eventually what happened was the word got around from her to the other ones, and I started getting fairly busy from that. But for me, a lot of what you can put on there is lower your advertising budget, you know, or cut your advertising budget by 50% and increase your profit simultaneously. Because that usually gets their attention. If it doesn't, then it's either not the business owner that saw it or you don't want them as a client anyway.
George Meehan mentions that you had mentioned the first module working with nonprofit organizations that there was an NPO package. Could you please mention what's in it?
Yeah, and some of that is being modified, you know, which is cool. We're going to get that out to everybody, too. And what that is a specific package for nonprofit organizations only. And it basically has an email in it, and it has some other follow-up, direct mail letter, and also kind of a loose bulleted script you can go by if you want to call them. But most of those methods work real well. And what that does is it basically approaches them as a new fundraising vehicle. So they're pretty attentive to that.
Eddie Lamb asks, in the workshop transcript, David says, if you want to email me, I can send you a link where you can get tons of stuff like that to offer to your list for free, FAQ from Room. Would that apply to our customers? The link I'm going to give you contains over 500 different products, so I'm sure you'll find something in there that would apply to your list. Do you have that link, David?
Oh, absolutely. And they can also get it if they go to CB, like ClickBank, cboffers.com/freetraffic.html, and it's a capital F and capital T. So it's cboffers.com/freetraffic.html, and it's also right in the front of that little ebook, and it's a free ebook, and you can download it, and that's got a ton of PLR products, and there's MRR stuff in there, all kinds of things that you can use. And as a matter of fact, when you look at the cover on the ebook there, that's from that place.
Excellent. All right, we'll send that link out after the webinar as well. and it's totally free. And Eddie asks, deals between businesses from the workshop transcript. One of the deals that he set up was between a pharmacist and a jewelry store owner. You mean you put deals together like that now?
Absolutely.
Oh, wait, I think this is the full frequently asked question. In the above, David says, I can show you how to put that together. Could we have details of how to put a deal like that together?
It's basically all in there, and what you do is you just have to get an agreement that makes sure that everybody gets paid, the money goes where it needs to be. But that was a prime example of a pharmacist that was paying between $3,000 and $4,000 a year to send Christmas cards to his entire list to thank them for being loyal patrons and that type of thing, which is a great idea. But when they married him with that jewelry store owner that was almost right across the street from him in the same little town, of course, everybody knew him too, and they just cut it so it was a three-way split of the profits. And they just put a little flyer in there that said, hey, you need to print this flyer out and take it to, you know, so-and-so jewelry store and give it to him only, because it was like a 40% discount for Christmas only. And that was a real way of showing his customers his appreciation for what they were doing. And the jewelry store kept an eye on it and tracked everything, and everybody split it. And the neat thing about that is if somebody tries to hurt somebody else on that deal, then it is not an evergreen product anymore, and they lose tons and tons of money. So, you know, it's very easy to figure out that you want that to last every single year.
Excellent. Lisa Rothstein asks, she's a marketing consultant copywriter, and she's looking for a range on prices for emails and email newsletters as part of an ongoing maintenance campaign. And her question is, would it be wise to offer a variety of packages, price points, examples, list maintenance plus one generic email per month at $150, which we already covered, that seems to be the basic lowest option.
Mm-hmm.
And then list maintenance plus one copywritten email per month equals $225. Maybe she meant plus two.
Yeah, and an added newsletter, yeah.
But the basic idea is, you know, a range of set packages to show the business owner, or do you create them kind of on the fly?
You can show them some that you've already done. That works really well. You can also give them those packages. It keeps it simpler for the business owner if they can understand that for this package, you know, this is what you're going to get exactly. And they're in that frame of mind. Most business owners are black and white type people. They're not gray people. And the easier you can make it for them to understand exactly what you're offering, the easier it is for you.
Perfect. So if you have samples, anything like that, it's good to bring those?
Absolutely.
Okay. And she's also wondering if she should charge an hourly rate for ongoing marketing consultation, coming up with promos, ideas, events, etc., in addition to the list management and email campaigns.
You can do that. I've never really done that. Well, a couple of times, but it was for bigger type projects. And most of the time, I will figure out a way to benefit from that as well. And if I can put it out there or create something or come up with an idea, then I'm going to take part of that profit for setting it up.
Right. And one thing is, when you start to get to the hourly rate, you're creating a job for yourself.
Right.
Which kind of goes against having that freedom of being a freelance consultant. So if you can just sell things in packages for several months at a time, one bang, it's done. Then you don't have to worry about, for instance, if you charge by hourly, then you would be taking up a lot of your bandwidth that you could be using to go get more customers.
Absolutely. And I agree with that 100%. Another great thing about it, though, is that once you get that out there, and you approach them with that idea, you know, if I'm going to do a new project or I think of something that is going to be great for this client, then when I call that client, I've got a really good idea of what I'm going to do for them already. And they get to the point after a while, after this happens once or twice over 6 or 8 months, that they know whenever you call and their downfield blocker picks up the phone and you say, hey, is Bob there? And they say, yeah, this is David Preston. That when they talk to him, it doesn't matter who they're on the phone with or what they're doing. They're like, hey, that person makes me a lot of money. Every time they call, I make money.
Right. The last thing is, the answer to your question is yes, Lisa. For multiple clients, you can use one AWeber account and have unlimited lists. Is that for GetResponse too, David?
Yeah, it is. It is for GetResponse. Most of them are pretty much the same. And I had somebody say, well, some of those autoresponder services will charge you a crazy amount of money if you start moving up and, you know, how many is on your actual list total. And sometimes that's true, but you have to think about it this way too. If I have certain clients that have a really large list or it starts growing really, really quick, well, it becomes more of a hassle to manage that list, and they already know that, you know, so I'm going to charge them the difference. So if I charge one client $250 a month, and that's going to totally cover everything that's in the entire database with all the clients.
Gotcha. So if someone had a list of they were getting over a certain number of leads, would you make that clear before you did business with them, or is that something that would come up? This is, look, I got over 1,000 leads, getting a lot of email responses. I guess, yeah, that's a good question. If you're managing a list for a business owner and you send out an email blast, what's the reply email address? Is it yours or is it the business owner's?
It's almost always theirs. If it's a special promo that I'm involved with them, then I will try to take care of the customer service as well, because that's basically introducing that person to me too. And that's what I'm after.
Another question on pricing from Daniel. David, I've seen that you have a pricing list that goes over services that you currently offer and what you charge for each one.
Correct.
Okay, so we'll give that out to you, Daniel, after the webinar. Each business client is unique and has different needs. How do you accommodate for the variety of services performed from client to client? I guess you run into issues with having a set price list and then showing that to a customer and then realizing that there's actually a lot more work on your part that you should be charging for, and you're kind of trapped because you've already given them a flat rate.
Not really, because no matter what kind of business they are, they all need basically the same thing. If it's going to be a website, you know, then they've got to have graphics. And, you know, if it's going to be logos, then they've got to have that. There's enough built into that to where if you outsource all of it, you're still going to come away really well.
The last question he has, he's given an example. The difference between giving costs of an autoresponder with graphics and with not, and it seems to me that it's whatever you want it to be. I mean, you could do a flat rate, or if graphics, you can charge more for that, and it's really whatever you want to put the price tag on.
It really is. It's totally your business. You can put whatever you want to. Like I said, you can go to outsourcing places and find what it would cost to do that. And if you want to charge them that, just tell them.
Sean says, can you provide the script you use when you cold call walking into a business as well as one for calling over the phone? Do you do any telemarketing to business owners?
No.
So he doesn't do that, Sean, but as far as the opening line of the business, I think we described that a little bit earlier in the FAQs. You walk in, you just strike up a conversation, totally non-threatening, just try to get the business owner talking about their problems and issues. All right, David?
That's pretty much it. And if you listen to them, you know, eventually they're going to start talking to you and you're going to hit on some ideas. And I've actually given them some ideas while I was standing there talking to them that they knew was worth a lot of money. When they thought about it, they were like, hey. And at that point, a lot of times they'll say, well, what is it that you do?
Gotcha. Andrew Pierce asks, Andrew, you really took advantage of the questionnaire here. He's got some good questions posted. Andrew, it looks like you're also disappointed with the $47 upsell. This is also, for those of you listening, this is before the transcripts were sent out with it, which were originally supposed to be with it, and we're also coming out with audios. So if any of you aren't satisfied, just contact me and get a refund, but we do have more coming out for that OTO, and we've already put all the transcripts and FAQs in there. So unfortunately, people who bought the OTO within the first couple of days when we launched this did not get the full package, and we have resolved that.
Then there's also going to be a ton of other unannounced bonuses going out over about the next week. You know, so there's going to be all kinds of extra stuff included in there.
Yeah, and some will just be for those who purchased the OTO, and some will be for everyone who got the $27 offer. Looks like he's also interested in legal documents. That's something you would have to talk to a lawyer about.
Yeah, each individual state, it varies greatly.
Yes, another question. The flyers are going to be sending out, and in the member section, the free customizable website template, it's the fourth link in the member section. In fact, I'll go up there right now and show you which one it is. It's the customizable workshop site. All the materials you need is in there.
I tell everybody this. Make sure that you change your PayPal button in there. I did not put one in there, period. There's just a big place, you cannot miss it, that says payment link here. So I actually had that happen before.
Make sure you're getting the payments.
Yeah, I had to call a student and say, hey, looks like you're getting some good response.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
How do you approach prospects for the PUF method? Do you advertise in local paper, leaflet, write to them, telephone?
Normally, I'll do that through B2B salespeople. That's the best way. Because if you're going to charge for something up front, let a pro handle it. I'm not dealing with that.
And in return, you give them about 75%?
Yeah, and if it's a $297 sale or whatever, you know, I'll give them at least 75% of that. Because all I really want to do is cover my cost and maybe come away with a few hundred dollars pocket change, and then the rest of it I'll pay out just to collect the back end because I know it's coming.
Right. When approaching NPO schools, presumably the idea is they market to business-owning parents. In this case, presumably the best plan is to target those schools with affluent parents. If not approaching parents, who are the schools chasing on our behalf?
Yeah, and that was why I said, You know, it works really well with parochial schools or private schools, that type thing, because it's more of an affluent academy type thing. And most of the people that send their kids to that are affluent and they do have money, which means they're more than likely business owners.
Module 2, you suggested pricing is obviously in U.S. dollars, assumes a U.S. market. What workshop pricing would you advise for the U.K.? As we mentioned with India, it would all be scaled to whatever your market currently is. So I don't know, is the U.K. still 2-1 or are they coming down?
Yeah, it's actually right around there, so you might be better off there. Another marketer asked me if I would join him on a U.K. tour maybe this coming spring or summer, and he said you could charge pretty much whatever you wanted over there, and they'll pay it.
There you go. It's whatever you want to price it at. Do you recommend a broker for placing newspaper and or magazine advertisements in the U.K.?
In the U.K., I specifically don't know. But I'm sure there are places on the net that you can find out. Yeah, there is a broker listed for the U.S. that was in there, which is, I suppose, what he was referring to. But, of course, since I haven't done that in the U.K. personally, I don't know of one in there. But I'm sure there is some.
And then, yes, do you target exclusively local businesses, or have you tried picking special vertical markets, car repair business and fast food restaurants, and targeting that with less concern about geographical location? If so, how well did it work? And perhaps there's a disadvantage that the back-end sales require more traveling, but can you charge more for the back-end consultancy?
You can do that, but in answer to the first question, most of the time if it's a franchise or a franchisee, that's going to be one of those deals that can take literally years to hammer out. That's not a joke, because they've got to get all legal and they've got to get everybody involved that's going to be involved, which of course is everybody. And they've got to make sure that all the franchisees want it. It can be a real, real long process. But on the flip side of that, as an example, a brake shop that's a franchisee, it works really well if you want to put a lead capture site in front of their main site and then do a redirect as soon as they capture their information, and it goes into their list and they get to see the franchise site. And that's really the best way I've found to do it. I have had something dragging along with one of those for 8 or 9 months before I finally really ever got any headway with them, and never did come to fruition, and didn't really waste a whole lot of my time though, but it just took forever, and they would send me a notification every now and then as to where they were at. I was like, okay.
Next, he asked, hiring salespeople, do you use Craigslist or other websites rather than using papers? And if you have, does it work or do you advise against it?
I don't know. I've actually never tried that. I have had other students that said they have used Craigslist and actually did fairly well. But what you have to look at is it shouldn't really matter how many you recruit in an area. The performers, you know, the cream's always going to come to the top. And I tell them that when I talk to them, if it's an interview by phone or in person or whatever, I said, look, I've got a certain quota that I'm going to meet every 2 weeks. And I don't care if it takes one salesperson or 20 salespeople. You know, I'd rather it be one. But if it takes 20, I mean, I'm going to hit the quota. You know, so that's totally up to you.
Gotcha. Well, it is kind of funny because my sales job with siding and windows, I got it through Craigslist, so it does work.
Hey, that's a great example. That's funny. Yeah, I've had a lot of folks say, hey, where do you get them from? And since I've been doing it so long, I mean, Craigslist wasn't around whenever I was doing it, which is mainly the reason I went through the local papers.
Yeah, I will say that there is a lot of spamming on Craigslist for make money offers that don't really lead you anywhere. If you're going to go that advertising route, I mean, what grabbed me into my offer was the guy was very straightforward. This is exactly what it is. He put the payment structure, put everything on there, pictures, made me feel very comfortable in meeting with him, and he really sold me on working for him. So the more effort you put into your ads, definitely the better response you're going to get.
Yeah, the more qualified individual you'll get on the other end. That makes total sense. And see, you got more experience on that stuff than I do, so that was good. Thank you for that.
In Bullet K of Module 3, outsourcing, you quote the figure of $350 per hour as the value for an average small business owner. Seems rather high to me. Do you get a lot of I wish and laughter? If people do not believe this figure, is there a risk that your credibility could be affected?
Not really. And the main reason for that is because if they really think about it, then it's very easy to figure out. Really small businesses are going to do, sometimes I've seen between 12 and 15, 18,000 a month just in credit card sales. You know, so if you divide that up between everything they're doing, it winds up to be around that number. So the government wasn't very far off whenever they put that out there.
The next question is another UK specific. What would be the equivalent of $350 per hour in the UK? Is that a comparable figure? We kind of already addressed that. It really depends, you know, on the UK. I know from friends of mine that have gone abroad in UK, they say the prices are the same as America, except they're in pounds. So right. It sounds like $350 here would be priced at 350 pounds over there, even though it's 2-to-1. So it sounds like for the UK, it's almost a 1-1 as far as the currency doesn't affect the numbers. So it would be 350 pounds an hour would be my guess.
I would think. Now, there's also got to be some places there you can look up, maybe the Department of Commerce or, you know, there's got to be some type of small business authority there that could probably answer that question specifically because they keep
right.
up with all that. They've got tons and tons of bean counters, you know, the world over, so.
And another thing you can do is look at what business owners are offering for marketing services. You can compare them to the U.S. prices and get an idea there. Module 4, Bullet B, is the 15-minute free consultation on the telephone at your office or do you drive them to your shop office to provide it?
I actually make it in person. Very rarely do they want to do it over the phone. And the main reason for that is I want to know what kind of business they're in, and I want to really see their operation. Because, well, a uniform shop, he wanted to do everything over the phone. I finally talked him into doing it in person. And when I got there, I mean, it was a real mess. Their fulfillment on the back end as far as the tailoring and all that kind of stuff, it was just a total wreck. How could you even find anything in the place? And I was like, holy moly. You know, we talked about some stuff, but that was one of the biggest things that he really needed to resolve immediately because they provided uniforms to cops all over the entire state, and those guys wind up coming back 2 or 3 times, you know, so what are the chances of his getting that contract again, you know, the following year? They just had to streamline it. It was just sloppy paperwork and management and didn't really think about it, that type stuff, but it was terrible customer service.
So you really need to be in their atmosphere to really be able to help them.
Yeah, you actually have to get a feel, you know, for what they're doing, and a 5-minute visit to their place of business is actually going to be worth 5 hours of time on the phone with them.
And in Module 4, Bullet B, the question here is, do you charge, after the 15-minute free consultation is over, do you charge per hour? Or is the 15 minutes free? I mean, does it go as long as it needs to be?
Mm-hmm. It's actually a trick. I just want to get in the door, and I've been in there sometimes for an hour and a half.
I know that. Our pitch going in there was the only leads that we had in windows and siding was you're getting to get an estimate good for a period of 2 years.
There you go. You know, and they lose sight of that and they could care less. You know, after about 10 or 15 minutes, you've got them. They understand where you're coming from to a degree, and it's just basically getting to know them. And I don't care how long it takes. I mean, I'm in there for the duration because I already know that the longer I'm in there, the better the chances are that it's going to be a very, very long-term relationship, and we're going to make a whole lot of money together.
Perfect. Module 4, you say, as discussed before, I charge $150, $250 to the database, but I do not recall having read this in any of the previous modules. I'm astonished that any small donor would pay that around $2,500 per annum, roughly 200 times 12 for the service. Am I misunderstanding the term small business? Roughly how many employees or what annual turnover are you talking about? How do you sell the figure to them? How do you even calculate that figure yourself? I think we've already addressed pretty much all of this. I guess a good question in here, though, is do you target a annual income for the business? Do you do any of that when you're knocking on doors?
Not really. A lot of it depends because they're showing up at the workshop anyway, so if they call me, you know, I'm going to come and talk to them. The neat thing to remember, though, is that that becomes a part of the profit very quickly. You know, if you're building their list and everything, $150 a month is nothing. You know, if you can save them a $3,000 ad, sending out an email, that's $150 a month is squat.
Right, and if they're spending $2,500 per year using this autoresponder, I mean, in your situation, I mean, most business owners are spending around $2,500 per month?
Easily. I've ran into some business owners that actually are only doing $300,000 or $400,000 a year, which sounds like a whole lot, but it's not, you know, for most small business owners. And those guys are spending between $5,000 and $6,000 a month on advertising.
Right. They're really spending about 10 times 2,500, if not more. I mean, my mom ran a business. The only advertising she did was one ad in the Sunday paper every week, and that cost her $60,000 a year.
So yeah, it adds up very, very quickly.
It's not cheap.
Well, the last client I talked to had an advertising package for a quarter with a local cable TV station, and it was almost $5,700, and that did not include any other form of advertising other than that.
There you go. So that's the real problem that this is addressing. More effective, cost-effective advertising, but it's also way more effective on marketing to your clients as well, having their email address. That's really what sells this. Business owners are spending through the roof on advertising, and this is just dirt cheap for them. I mean, isn't it, David?
It really is. And the other thing is the other advertising that they're doing, they can't track. You know, it's very tough to track that without customer involvement. And customer involvement is a big no-no to most business owners. So they're taking a shotgun approach that's costing them a horrendous amount of money on average. and they have absolutely no idea if it's even working or not. And the email, once you get your list of buyers built in, pretty much can track that, you know, statistically when you send this, this is how many you're going to get. It's a big, big difference. It can be almost nothing to send something out to an email list, and then you're saving all of the money that you would be spending elsewhere.
Right. Next question is, do you really leave the client's office with a fat check the day of?
I do that quite frequently. And that goes back to, is it a free 15-minute consultation and then it's over? No, sometimes I'm in there for an hour and a half, and it actually depends on them. You know, the
right.
more comfortable they are with you and the more you can show them what it's going to do, then, yeah, that does actually happen quite frequently.
In Module 6, you discuss outsourcing. You mentioned 20 hours to set up a new client. Regardless of whether it's outsourced or not, that's a lot of work. Do you therefore charge new clients an initial setup fee in addition to a monthly maintenance fee, or do you simply wrap it all up and hide it in the latter, perhaps on the assumption understanding that they stick with you for a minimum of 12 months?
They don't really have to stick with me a minimum of any time at all for that. If I'm outsourcing at all on, say, a $5,000 package, I mean, I'm still walking away with over $3,000, and they could stop the following month, and the only thing I'm going to miss is $150 a month, you know? So very, very rare. I'd never, ever charge them a setup fee because they hear that a lot, and they already know what that is, and they already know that's pretty much a scam. That setup fee is going straight into your pocket. Business owners are not stupid. And I've actually been in a business before when a merchant services salesperson was in there, sold credit card terminals and stuff, and he was trying to get him to switch to his service, which was lower. I fortunately knew about that industry, too. And the owner looked point blank at me, you know, when the guy was standing there, and he said, so it's a $295 setup fee. And he goes, so that's going straight in your pocket because it didn't cost you but one phone call to switch this, right? I've never charged that.
In Module 6, in outsourcing to college kids, we're always up to the latest and greatest where every project is trying to keep the top prior one. Where does that leave you with your maintenance after the college kid moves on? Is it fairly easy to train a new one, or does that take a lot of your time?
You get so many applications from that, it's absolutely crazy. College kids, as you know, cannot keep a secret. So if they're making $400 or $500 a week from outsourcing, it doesn't take long before that gets around. Hey, don't tell anybody this, but this is what I'm doing. And then you wind up getting tons of applications before it's over.
Oh, yeah, and their friends know when they're out buying all the beers.
Absolutely.
When you outsource this work to either college students or via the Internet, I mean, do you have an office where people are doing this work for you, or do you just do it all over the Internet?
I personally have an office where I got independents that come in on their own terms. I never tell them what time to get there or whatever. It's just project outsource. They can use a lot of the software that I have there. And that's the only reason. But lately, just about everybody that has set it up is almost all telecommute. So it's all done either from their dorm room or from their home, or they could be home for the holidays with mom working on a site.
Right. You know, just for people listening, I mean, you don't need to have an office to start this.
No.
The next is, what quality gates, especially around configuration management, do you have in place to ensure there will be no problems with outsourced websites and related solutions?
Well, everything goes through me. So any client that I have has got to be approved by me. The work's got to be approved by me. The client actually knows absolutely nothing about the person that actually did the work. And it's the same way with us. If we do outsourcing, we never, ever contact the client. We don't want to. You know, that's not our turf. That's yours. So that's the best way to handle it. That way, if you have a problem, you can go right back to the person. The business owner has no clue. And if necessary, you can get someone else to do it.
Excellent. In Module 7, you describe outsourcing the workshops. Does this not reduce your ability to promote yourself as an expert and thereby reduce your potential for back-end sales?
It absolutely does. You know, if you don't want to get in front of people and don't want to do the workshops, that's one of the downsides to it, is that it's going to brand that salesperson, but, you know, they're not going after the back-end. They're just doing the workshops. You know, it's fairly easy for you to stop by and talk to them afterwards. And they're like, oh, I already got a website. Well, I'm here to talk to you about your website. And they're like, well, I already got one of those. I just put one up and everything. And you're like, yeah, I know. I built it. That makes a big difference. And they're like, oh, you did? And I said, yeah, that was me. Oh, wow, I didn't know you were localized. Yeah, I'm right up the street.
If you have outsourced the workshops as a Sky Module 7, do you still visit the prospective client yourself, or do you outsource that too? Do you have a sales team, David, that goes out and gets clients for you and actually closes the deals, and then you just give them a percentage?
Yeah, we've got a team of about five guys that operate in several different counties, and they take care of all of that, and I just make mine off of the outsourcing. And if they want to go out on their own, then I'll be more than happy to show them how to do that too. But for the most part, they're like, hey, that's an all-in-one deal. I don't have a problem with that. You know, I'll just outsource it and I'm done.
The last question is, do you hit a cap where you can't be scaled up anymore?
Not really. As big as the internet is growing and as fast as it's growing, I don't think that's ever going to be a problem. That would be a great problem to have or to try to tackle anyway.
Jill Harrington asks, what I need and want most is more examples of websites. I would be great to see the before and after with autoresponders added and or more examples of mini site websites. I don't know if you're able to release this kind of information, but do you have examples, URLs of any websites that you've done?
Yeah, there's quite a few of them. I mean, there's some of them in the product where you can hit one or two websites in there, but I actually tried that years ago where I released some client information. And that was a major, major mistake.
They started pitching the clients, huh?
Well, yeah, they started hitting it and filling out the autoresponder form, and they were getting in the list. And they were getting phone calls, and, you know, it's not a good thing when you get a client that calls you back and says, well, hey, why is this person calling me?
Right. You know, Jill, there's a lot of examples out there of autoresponders. I mean, anything that has an incentive to opt in. You can just put up the autoresponder form, but you normally add an incentive, David, of why they should opt in to get, you know, a discount or a report or something?
Absolutely. You know, and you can build a little PDF report, even if it's only 5 pages, for that client. And we include that in the setups and things like that, too, in the outsourcing. And that works really well. You know, like one guy that sold a specific type of hospital shoe or one that was made for surgeons or doctors or that type of thing. You know, then we could put a little report in there for the orthopedic benefits of that shoe so they can read all the reports and then decide that, hey, that's where I want to buy my stuff. So.
Gotcha. I've had a sales letter type website for many years but don't have any experience with non-sales letter type sites. I will hire someone to do them for my clients, but I need example or templates to show my website maker. Well, it looks like Jill David can't release his clients' personal websites, but I know if you go on the Warrior Forum and you look at David's thread and you ask, there are definitely many students of David and people who are actively doing this who I think would be more than happy to share examples.
Yeah, and there's actually quite a few of them on there that have posted on there that have built websites for clients, and I think there was a couple of guys on there that actually removed the private information or the links to it and showed examples on there. I saw a couple of those, and they were actually really good.
Excellent. Next question from Jill. I'd like to elaborate on the autoresponder fees. Looks like we already addressed the autoresponder fees. $25 per email written seems really low to me. Do you come up with the email content creation, or does your client provide the ideas? I think a good question with that is the day you meet them, the day you get the check, do you go over everything? You know, if you sell them a quarter package or a year package, do you go over everything that you want in those emails?
Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to get personal, you know, not really personal, but I need some personal information from that business owner to build those sites. And if you really think about it, to me, once you get fairly decent at writing those type of emails, I earn about $1 a minute, you know, at 25 bucks a pop. I mean, let's get real. It might take me 20 minutes, you know, or 25 minutes at the most, you know, to write an email. And if I'm selling it to them in a package, then most of the time all I've got to do is go back to one that I've had that was in a similar business and modify that some, and I'm done twice as fast.
Perfect. Next, Jill asks, when is a Lightbox opt-in more appropriate than having a separate opt-in page?
That would be for, like, franchisees, a redirect page it's commonly referred to. And we went over that earlier. A lot of those guys, you cannot put that on a franchisee page most of the time. And the reason is because you don't have access to the site, and the business owner doesn't either.
Is a light box when it scrolls down over the top of the screen?
Actually, a light box, what it does is when they hit the page, it looks totally normal, just like there's no opt-in box or anything there. And you can time it for whatever you want. Most of mine are 3 to 5 seconds. And after that time frame, they're just starting to check out the site, and the site gradually fades out into the background, and the opt-in box fades into the center of the screen simultaneously. And the only way is to either close it or put their information in.
Gotcha. I'm sure some other people appreciated that clarification. I've been to those. There's the ones that, like, fly in, too, but the light box seems nice because it blocks out everything, and it's just the focus is the opt-in.
That's it. It's right in the center of their page. You cannot get away from it. You know, you're either going to have to close out of it or put your information in, and it works real well.
Can you do that through AWeber and GetResponse?
Yes, you can. With GetResponse, I'm not that familiar with, but I'm sure there's something similar to that in there. In AWeber, when you're creating the HTML, or it says Get HTML, when you hit that link, there's actually 4 boxes there, and the top box is an inline form. and the very bottom box is light box feature.
Okay. Looks like John Lynch is making a comment. We will be sending out the flyers, John, also with the OTO. The people above who mentioned they were disappointed is just because the full OTO was not sent to them, but that all has been sent to them. We're adding bonuses, and we'll provide a link to the members area if you want to grab that after the webinar. Brown says, are you going to provide the presentation you do for the four-hour workshops? I know you gave the template, but to see the actual presentation as a PDF would be much more helpful.
And that's in there.
Yeah, I think you might have missed the opportunity for the other offer, but also in one of the modules, David does go over, if you want to create your own presentation, the types of information you want to put in it.
Correct.
Cynthia says, I also ordered the upsell and was surprised that there wasn't more to it. Same situation, we sent all that out.
Same thing.
Okay, the next is from Howard. Hi, David. When you demonstrate the AWeber process at the workshop, do you encounter any resistance to quoting them $500 to set it up?
No.
Because you don't quote them, right? You're not doing
no.
it there.
No, I don't sell them there. There's absolutely no selling at the workshop. That's a big, big no-no.
And do you create an opt-in bribe from the get-go or later on?
It's always from the get-go.
And details of the 500 to 5,000 service package, we will be sending that out. And tried selling products at back of room. Details?
Once again, same thing. The only thing I've got back there are legal pins and pads and my card.
And do you actually create an opt-in page at the workshop or just do PowerPoint?
I normally just do PowerPoint once in a great while. Depending on the audience, I will look at some of their websites and do a right-click and view source and look at some of their keywords. And that usually floors them. They're all sitting there like, how'd you do that? You know, and it's so simple. But one of the last workshops I did, we picked one guy who ran a place and looked at it, and he wasn't getting hardly any traffic at all. It was a real simple fix, and it was just because he had a comma between what should have been a long-tailed keyword, and they broke it down into separate individual words.
Perfect. So it's almost always just PowerPoint.
Right.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's Hard to Find Seminars.
We already went over salespeople. Do you WordPress blogs at all for your clients, or are they all just HTML sites or squeeze pages?
We do get into other things with them. Eventually we'll wind up doing, and that's part of traffic generation, is WordPress blogs or blogging in general. And we can do that. We can also do a lot of other things, SEO. We do traffic generation. We do all kinds of stuff, but it just keeps building into other areas, and that's what it's all about. You know, it's just bringing them slowly into the 21st century.
As you go along too, David, don't your clients kind of create the business for you where they start to ask you, hey, we'd like to do this with our website, or were they all services that you thought out ahead of time?
You're absolutely right. A lot of it does come from the client themselves, and they start actually paying attention to some of the stuff that's going on around them, and especially with their competitors, because if I'm not working for them, then I'm going to be working for their competitor, and they pretty much understand that.
Right. Perfect. Mark asks, when starting a consulting business from scratch, how would you suggest overcoming the issue of credibility or lack of?
The easiest way to do that is to start with that module in there that includes the branding aspect of that, and that works extremely well. Try to brand your own name, and there's very little competition for that, you know, unless your name is Smith or Jones or something like that. And an example of that was my name was already taken by a very famous artist, and there was no way. You know, I was going to unseat that guy from the top spots on Google. I knew that. So instead of competing with him, I just simply switched to David Preston, Inc., and no problem.
Gotcha. I guess in doing these radio shows, those are activities that give you that instant credibility, right?
Yeah, and the workshop basically itself makes a huge difference because you've just spent half the day in front of these guys showing them what you do know. So your credibility is already through the roof. I mean, they're calling you. It's not the other way around.
Right. I talked to Brian McElroy on this one. It's funny because he said, there's two things you can do. He goes, you can either just admit that you're an expert and go with it. He goes, or you can get over it. But you are an expert, and a lot of people don't realize this in the warrior form. Even brand newbies know a lot of information that would just blow the minds of offline business owners. When you start talking about HTML or autoresponder copy, just using those phrases is pretty powerful stuff.
It really is. For the most part, they have absolutely no clue about how that stuff works. And even on that really huge monster thread that's been running forever on there, there's been a lot of references to folks that have gone online you know, and hunted for businesses in their local area, and it's right around right where I said it would be. It's about 90% of every business you look at doesn't have a lead capture form. And the reason they don't is because they totally do not get it.
Perfect. So it's not difficult to do. You just talk about what David's sharing and you'll be solid. Howard asks, he just got the OTO and seems like an hour content, not four. It looks like people are concerned about having enough. But we are coming out with audios, and David's going to go into much more detail on what to say in those slides. Is that correct, David?
Correct. And then another thing, too, is there's a lot of participation that goes on in there, and that helps tremendously. But it's hard sometimes, because of the participation, not to get totally off track on something else.
Right. We'll be sending out those audios, just the OTO people, Howard. Those will really help you out. But also questions to a lot of this. I mean, we probably spent almost 3 or 4 hours just answering these FAQs, so you can imagine what a live workshop would be like. Dave K. asks, how do you establish sufficient credibility up front to make business owners attend the workshop and deal with you in the first place? Many are skeptical about consultants and consider them no better than snake oil salesmen.
Yeah, I agree with that as far as consultants go, and I'll give you a prime example of where he's coming from and how I addressed it, and it was really funny. I would never say this to a business owner, but I really don't come across as a consultant, period, when it comes to the business owners. That rarely ever comes up. But I had somebody in my extended family, we'll say, that met me for the first time, married into the family. And he ran about a $2.5 to $3 million business offline, installing cable and stuff for fiber optic networks. And he looked right at me before and said, so you're a small business consultant? And I said, yeah, you could say that. And he goes, man, I hate you guys. And I said, why? And he goes, man, you guys just drain me, man. You kill me. He said, you guys all ought to be lined up and shot. And he said that right in front of the whole family. And I said, well, you have to look at it this way, Ted. If you were actually doing what you were supposed to be doing, you wouldn't have to call us. Yeah, you're right. Oh. You're right. And I said, I know I'm right. I never wrong.
That's pretty good.
If you knew what you were doing, you wouldn't have to pay for them. Either go to school or put up.
Harry asks, how to tell clients about increasing rates as subscriber list goes up, similar to what AWeber is doing?
I kind of tell them that they're approaching a threshold, and I put it to them a completely different way. And if you're going to write something down, write this down. I put it to them a completely different way. I'll call them up and say, hey, Scott, this is David Preston. How you doing? You're like, oh, hey, man, what's happening? Then I said, look, man, your list is approaching the size to where you can actually cut down on your other methods of advertising, and we can sink a little bit more of that into the online advertising, and it's going to pay off extremely well. They have absolutely no problem saying, it's how much more? And you're like, it's 100 a month more. Oh, well, okay.
No brainer. The next one is, please allow download a documentation in the modules, flyer, legal document, pharmacy, spot, and we'll be sending out those documents after the webinar.
Yeah, that's correct. And like we said, there'll be a whole lot of stuff following that, too.
And a set of letters for those of us who are not intending to do this via seminar will be really helpful. If you go to the sales page, Harry, David gives you the exact letter that you can send out for direct mail. Is there anything else you send, David?
Not really. You could try to come up with postcards or something like that if you want, but for me, the workshops are absolutely the cash of the entire business. They just resolve everything all at one time.
And you don't do direct mail anymore, do you?
No. I actually did direct mail for, I don't know, probably a month in the beginning, and then I came upon the idea of the workshops, and that was it for me.
So there you go. If you want to escape sending direct mail, workshops, word of mouth takes over, radio shows, things like that, and you'll have a flood of clients. Sherry Walsh asks, brilliant program. A couple of questions. She works full-time, Monday through Friday. Probably can't get an appointment until 4:30 or so during the week. How should I handle the fact that I only meet late afternoon, early evening, and weekends? In other words, what should I say on the phone when setting up an appointment? Do I tell them I have another job?
You can actually do that any way you want. A lot of times you can tell them that you're just completely scheduled, you know, until that time. That'd be the earliest that you could see them, and that helps a lot. But also, you know, if you're doing it on the weekend, then it's not going to be long, you know, if you're doing a full-time job. That if you start meeting with clients on the weekend, that's going to be your full-time job very quickly.
There you go. I'm thinking of hiring an answering service virtual office to answer my calls during the day I'm on work. I can't answer them while I'm at my 8-to-4 job. Is this a good idea to outsource, I guess, a virtual assistant to handle phone calls or just send them to a message recorder?
I wouldn't do that just because of the expense that's involved in it. You know, if they're interested, if you do a workshop and they call, they're going to be fine until you call them back. I just make sure that I call them back that day, if at all possible. And sometimes I've even gone in really, really early in the morning to meet the business owner before they even open. And to a lot of them, that's a great solution.
So it's okay to just send them to a message recorder if you're not able to answer it?
Absolutely. And just tell them, you know, you'll get back to them as soon as you possibly can.
Sherry, if you need another number for this, if you use Skype, you can actually buy for, I think it's $1.99 a month. You can have your own number and just automatically have them go to voicemail, and then you can call them back on your regular phone if you want, but that way you don't have to buy another phone line, and you can just have a business message for them.
Absolutely. And that's a great tip.
It's $1.99. It's nothing. What days and times of day do you find are best for holding workshops? It sounds like Saturday and Sunday are the best days. Is that right, David?
Yep. Anything that doesn't totally interfere with their work schedule. That's what you've got to remember. It's you've got to work around their schedule.
And next we have Nick. Looks like he's in a bit of debt and is looking for help on a way to earn money online. David, do you want to say anything to Nick?
Basically, if you can just start taking action on some of that stuff in there, it turns around really, really quickly. One or two clients is really all it takes to turn your whole month around.
So, you know, Nick, it's just all about going out there and taking action. Read through the workshops, listen to the webinar, and, you know, just get out there and start doing this, and you will solve that problem. Lot says, when you write an email for them, how do you know what to write? Do they send you some basic information, or how does it work? So, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, we kind of covered that earlier. I do get some personal information from them because I want that customer to know the business owner, like them, to trust them, you know, to get to know them personally because that's where the loyalty comes in. And that's what you're after. You know, so even if somebody has higher prices, they're still going to go to Phillip's store because they know him now.
Perfect. What are tricks to build the list at light speed besides the one with the receipt? That's a good question. Is there anything else that you use in order to help your customers get opt-ins other than putting the discount on the receipt?
That works extremely well. That works much better. And it's really kind of funny because the only people that ever ask that, one of the warriors that were on there, of course, is the biggest offline guy in Australia. And he said that was probably the single most valuable piece of advice that he'd ever gotten was the receipt deal. You can tell the folks that ask that question have never tried it because you can build a list sometimes at 50 to 60 people a day opting into that list from the receipt deal. And another thing that I use is, of course, press releases. And there are several places that you can do for like 50 or 60 bucks that will actually write a press release for the business and get it out there to 50 or 60 different engines. And we've got that in our outsourcing too. We use a guy who does nothing but that for us as articles and press releases. And it's part of the packages. And that delivers some immediate traffic.
Awesome. And the last one is you mentioned there are places on the internet that you can get products very inexpensively or totally free that have a really good value for your customers. And where are those?
That was actually in the link that we gave out a little earlier where they can actually go to that, and it's totally free. There's tons and tons of PLR products, articles, books, even master resale rights stuff in there. But I always go for the PLR stuff because that way I own it, and I can make it a customer's or I can do anything I want with it. It's mine. It is totally free to join. You can get it through that link. It's supposed to be $200 annually, but I know the guy that owns it, so...
And there's two more questions that were added as we were going through this. We'll just... grab them right now. Matt says, with this much experience, you have noted many trends that you see in certain industries. Which submarkets of certain industries benefit the most and are congruent with your tactics? You want to address that, David?
Yeah, there's actually several different ones that come to mind. A lot of them are any of the food chains or any convenience stores and that type thing because they can build on, most of those are a one-shot deal. And if you can turn that into a lifetime value customer, man, it just opens up a whole door for the people that own that to call everybody that they know to start building in the way that they're building in. A lot of those are owned by the same type of family or it's kind of kept in the family business. So he might have four or five brothers or sisters that all own stores just like he does.
Perfect. How many times do you follow up after the first foot-in-the-door service offering to expand your monthly maintenance with existing clients?
I usually touch base with them about once a month, if possible, and I do that usually by telephone, sometimes if I'm in the area shopping, because they're all local anyway. And my wife used to hate that, was we'd be out somewhere and she'd be shopping somewhere and turn around and I'm gone because I'm next door because that guy's a client and I'll be talking to him about stuff while I'm in there. I'll touch base with him at least once a month personally and let him know what's going on. And a lot of times when I do call, I've already got another idea, you know, for either their list or for something else that's going to make them money. along with me.
A good general question is, most of what you do tailored to specific businesses, or can you cookie cutter this for the types of services you can offer, like SEO, for instance?
I don't know if cookie cutter would be a right term, but I mean, yeah, there's different packages you can offer for SEO that will work for pretty much most businesses because all SEO is pretty much the same anyway. But other than that, there's not really a cookie cutter solution for every single business out there.
Right. Ken says, probably won't be able to attend the live event, so here's my question. Not all of us are very good at or even want to host live events. Surely there must be some way to spin this approach after initial offline content so as to revert back to online and or phone contact. And before you answer that, David, actually had someone ask me if they thought webinars would be a good way to host those workshops online and have them attend that way. I don't know if you've done that or could shed some light on that.
Yeah, we've actually experienced and are, you know, experimenting, you know, with teleseminars, with webinars, with stuff like that. But for the most part, most of the business owners are not going to sit in front of a computer, and that's just their deal. You know, they're too busy doing stuff, and so far, that's been our experience so far. We might be approaching it the wrong direction. Haven't really figured that out yet, but I've pretty much stuck with the live events because they get to know you personally, and that makes a big difference, is they can see you, feel you, touch you. And that's the credibility.
Even if it wasn't a webinar, though, let's say you weren't comfortable doing, you know, a live presentation in front of a group of business owners. Other than radio, is there some ways you can kind of get around that and still generate similar results?
Yeah, live radio generates a lot of results because, once again, it all goes back to branding and credibility. And if they hear you on a radio show, then you're an expert. They don't really care about your background. I guess part of the human nature that everybody says, well, if this guy's on the radio, he's got to be good. So
sounds like the best approach, if you're just absolutely not comfortable with standing up in front and giving a presentation, if you want to just do everything over the phone, I mean, it sounds like radio would be the most comfortable way to do that because it's just you with a broadcaster in a room, or you could even be in your home, and that sounds to be like the biggest bang for your buck, and it actually doesn't cost you anything.
Absolutely true.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, David. I'm sure everyone appreciates you going through and answering about 50 questions, some with multiple questions. And, you know, I just want to thank you for your time and look forward to being on the webinar this evening and getting into the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, we'll have a lot of fun, I'm sure.
All right, David, thanks a lot.
Okay, have a great day.
For any questions, please contact Michael at michael@michaelsinoff.com.